Save big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Finish up projects with GE-branded silicone sealants. Tub and tile silicone is 100% waterproof and offers same-day water readiness, making it perfect to use in kitchens and bathrooms. Shop our selection of GE sealants in-store and on Menards.com and save big. Plus, check out the weekly flyer to view all of our other great deals happening this week. Save big.
Hello, and welcome to the Houston Innovators Podcast. I'm Natalie Harms, editor of Innovation Map. This podcast is brought to you by Texas Citizens Bank. Through good and tough times, you need a bank that will stand by you. Texas Citizens Bank gives Houston small and medium-sized businesses the resources they need to thrive. As one customer says, a huge thank you to our friends at Texas Citizens Bank. Great customer service and down-to-earth good people. Call 713-948-5700 to learn more today. My guest for this episode is Philip Yates, founder of Equal Liberty, a Houston-based tech-enabled startup focused on supporting diverse entrepreneurs. Philip joins the show to discuss his company and the inaugural Black Entrepreneurship Week, which is taking place in Houston starting this Saturday, November 27th. Philip and I will also talk about the recently announced Diversity Fund Houston, a $3 million initiative to invest in diverse tech founders in Houston. Philip, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Natalie, for having me. I really appreciate it.
We've got a lot going on, and I'm excited to talk about all of it today on this episode. So just to start out, tell me about Equal Liberty, your career building up to starting this company, and why you decided to found it, and what does the platform do?
That's a long story, because it's almost it's a combination of things, experiences that I went through personally. And so Equal Liberty is premised off of binary economics, which was founded by Louis Kelso. He's an economist, so I really won't bore you on that. But basically, it was a way for us to figure out how do you turn consumers into producers. And so he spearheaded a lot of things, such like the employee stock option plan and et cetera, in economics, but really just figuring out a way to not necessarily take people's portion from the pie, from the economy, but making sure that the pie enlarges, and then you figure out a way to distribute it faster to more people who are contributing to the economy. And so growing up, you see people who try their best, pursue their goals and dreams the same manner that you and I have. And obviously you're doing well for yourself and all of all your viewers at Innovation Map, but people don't always get those same opportunities that you and I have gotten. And so that's where Equal Liberty stemmed from, was how can we make it so that we utilize the resources that we've taken advantage of to pursue our goals and dreams, and then enhance that through technology so that other people can now take advantage of those opportunities and resources, and then kind of fast track or gamify, or even some people say, hack the experience so that more people can participate in the economy. And so we've been pursuing this for over 10 years now. Really, it was founded on the idea that I haven't been perfect, and I wasn't born into a life of, you know, where I had everything I needed, but I did have good parents, and I had a great community that was behind me, and I had mentors. And so every time that I stumbled or failed, there was somebody there to make sure that I stayed on track so that I could someday become an attorney, someday become, you know, a community advocate, or someday pursue entrepreneurship in the manner in which I'm doing with Equal Liberty. And so I took that same blueprint in which community, mentors, opportunities, and I put it into a system called Equal Liberty. And I just didn't, start putting money or time behind it. I actually tested it out. When I was younger, I had a nonprofit called ADIF Alumni Group, which Council Member Thomas for the city of Houston actually helped me spearhead. Went to the Urban League and tested out concepts there at their Economic Development Entrepreneurship Center, which I'm thankful for mentorship like Judson Robinson III, the president and CEO of the Urban League, and also Eric Goody, the vice president of the Houston Area Urban League, and many board of directors. And over time, I collected data, and then finally, I was able to build an MVP and then a beta, and then we launched it. And it's just been a a great support. And the goal of Equilibrity Last is to build diversity and property ownership by linking these individuals to the capital market. And so the whole experience is about taking people on a journey from their community to the capital markets, getting them prepared so that they have capacity to pursue wealth building opportunities. And sorry for that long answer. You're like, I'm cutting this out. I'm kicking them off the podcast right now. But I just kind of want to at least tell you as much as I could with the amount of time I had.
Well, it's so fascinating. I think, you know, a key part of success is having a network around you to help. You know, I think that's most entrepreneurs' story. But the idea of enabling it with technology, I mean, that's impressive. So like, how exactly does it work? You know, how does the tech come in to really provide these opportunities and resources for your users?
Absolutely. So everything on the platform is hyper-local. And so it's based on connectivity. And the time you log on, you're actually joining a community, which is what you're talking about, Natalie, is that people need a network. And so we're going to put you in the network, but we're going to put you in your geographical network. And we're doing that for two reasons. One, a lot of times you don't know what you have. And so like my experience at the Urban League, I tell people all the time, when I joined that community, I learned just as much, if not more, from the people that embraced me there in that network as I did in law school or going to business school or in college. But it's because it was built to be a community. And so why not do that so that, you know, the person who wants to pursue wealth building opportunities gets to know the banker up the street, or they get to know the local business owner or the local community leader so that they have an ecosystem to thrive in and they don't have to travel across town or across the country, which later on we can discuss in terms of I've seen real life examples where that has to happen. So it's geolocation based. You're automatically connected to a mentor, but a mentor that has went through the same experiences as you. And so that's where the localization really starts in terms of using our, you know, algorithms and machine learning to actually create that experience. From there, you start the journey. And that's exactly what it is. We're changing those short term behaviors or tiny habits that a lot of the users that we want to pursue in those communities. We're basically training them to pick up new skills along the way. As they go, they'll be able to unlock capital opportunities. And so if your goals align with your activities, which we're tracking through our data, then you get to unlock an opportunity where you now get to access capital. And that's through our corporate partnerships. That's through our partnerships with nonprofits. And most importantly, through banks. A lot of times, you know, when we look for capital, it's not until we need it. And then in the communities that we want to reach, so we're talking about communities that are low to moderate income, that have been distressed, that don't have a lot of assets. It's really when they're de-stressed that they try to get capital, and then they wonder why, you know, you're not getting loans that you want, or you're not getting approved for certain resources. Well, we're saying, look, let's start the relationship now. Let's get you educated. And that's all free in terms of financial literacy education and how it's applicable to the wealth building process, so that when you unlock the capital opportunity, now we have a new profile for you to go and get the capital that you desire. And so we're doing two things. We're creating a new asset class for banks and other financial institutions, but then also we're building a group of producers and our wealth creators in the community that now will take ownership in that geographical region in which they already live in, which is not happening, Natalie. You know, we always throw the word gentrification around, but we never really attack it at its root, the root problem. And a lot of times it's ownership, and ownership, not only in ownership of assets, but taking ownership of your environment, because if it's devalued, and then you don't have a way to truly invest where you feel ownership, because, you know, if you're voting, you're not seeing the results that you want. And we've seen that even carry over into the justice system. I mean, just the look and feel of an environment, the beautification of it. We want to change all that by way of empowering our users to take ownership of their environment through the wealth building process. And so that's what the app is designed to do. And we think it's going to take maybe 2 to 3 years, but it may take longer. But we won't know that until we start testing it out. And we know we have to connect to the people in that neighborhood, whether it's the local leaders, the local banks, you know, policymakers, everybody who's already contributing. We want to be a convener so that we can help them through that process and making sure that the user reaches those goals in which they set for themselves on the platform.
I wonder, because it sounds like you have, you know, some good feedback so far, but, you know, when you look at long-term goals, what would be a dream scenario for you to see the impact of Equal Liberty? What's that big picture goal for you?
You know, just, you know, people say the big, hairy, audacious goals. I always said in the back of my mind, it'd be great if you can end poverty in America. Do I think that can happen in my lifetime? Absolutely not. But I do think we can push the needle forward. And so through technology, I'm hoping that the platform evolves where we're able to create financial models, go into a community and assess the financial health, utilizing the resources that are there, utilizing, you know, making sure everybody has a mentor. And then if everybody in that community within, you know, within framework of Equal Liberty can at least have an opportunity to pursue wealth, then our job is done. And that's all we're asking, is that everybody gets the opportunity. We understand the challenges that we face as, you know, just human beings in general, in terms of whether it's health, you know, mental or financial, and just traumatic events happen that cause us, you know, to go through, you know, poverty and other situations. But that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about people just not even having a fair chance to actually pursue the journey. So if we can build a technology that allows everybody to say, look, if I download this app, I can at least get on the journey, then our work is done.
Well, I know raising the awareness is a big component of it. So I think that's what next week is going to be about, the Black Entrepreneurs Week that you are leading with Equal Liberty, beginning this Saturday. So tell me about where this idea for BEW came about and what people can really expect from it in terms of a programming perspective.
Yeah, so Black Entrepreneurship Week, it was actually just born in one of our committee meetings. And like you said, it was about raising awareness, amplifying those entrepreneurs, amplifying capital that's actually, you know, being utilized in the community, uplifting entrepreneurship in the Black community. So it was a way to almost mix a town hall meeting with a community celebration, because as we talk about Equal Liberty and us trying to diversify property ownership and link people to the capital markets, we can't overlook the issues that we still see in capital markets. And because if you keep overlooking them, obviously, they'll persist and continue to be there. And so that's what this is about. Let's have the discussion about entrepreneurs and what they're trying to pursue to create wealth for themselves. And so throughout this week, starting with, you know, hip hop artist Master P at the Black Market, which Black Market's owned by another Black entrepreneur by the name of J.O. Malone. He and I have really started working together in terms of how we can go into these smaller communities to raise awareness of entrepreneurship and wealth building initiatives. So we're going to start there. And from there, we're going to work with the entire ecosystem, because there are a lot of great organizations that are doing amazing work. And so we want to celebrate them. We want to celebrate like Innovation Math. The fact that, you know, when you hear about Equal Liberty or you hear about a diversity fund or somebody doing amazing things to try to have an impact using technology, you guys call. And that's not always happening. And so you have to raise the awareness of the people who are doing the work that you're supposed to be doing in the ecosystem, while calling out the fact that we still have a problem with capital. We have a problem with how long the dollar stays in the Black community. We have a problem that there's, you know, 2.1, you know, or $2.2 trillion that circulate through the Black community. However, when it comes to owning homes, having a savings account, or any other wealth building asset, we're usually in last place. And so how do we close that loop to make sure that as we continue to pursue entrepreneurship, we're now also creating capital, owning assets, and making sure that we're building wealth inside the Black community as well. And the only way to do that, we think, is through using entrepreneurship as an intervention, where we're saying, look, you're creating something through entrepreneurship because you see a problem and you're trying to solve it. But don't forget about the goal over here, which is not to create a new problem for yourself, it's to create wealth. And that's what we hope to do through Black Entrepreneurship Week.
Well, it's very exciting. You seem to have a lot lined up for the week, and you've got some great partners involved. Chase Bank is one of them. What does it mean to have these types of relationships going into the week, to have these partners stand by you and support what you're trying to do?
It just speaks volume to the city of Houston. We live in an amazing city. We have an amazing ecosystem with people who understand that, hey, this city is diverse. We have a majority of the population are now, you know, Black or brown, or they're young, they're foreign. And so you have to start being innovative in ways in which you serve the community. And so Chase Bank gets it. And they automatically, once they understood that, hey, we're trying to get more people into the capital markets, we're trying to create a new asset class, they didn't think about, hey, we want to sign an exclusive, you know, deal with Equilibrity. It was, no, we're aligned in our mission. Let's go to the community and let's serve together. And obviously, with Chase Bank being a premier bank in our country, it opens up other doors. And so I'm thankful for having a platform like Chase Bank. And Sherry Green, who I'll be remiss if I didn't mention on this podcast, she's the vice president she's the community manager for Chase's new initiative. And so she's been phenomenal in helping out. And even as I told her, I wanted to go in certain neighborhoods, talk to certain leaders, she would help even connect the dots there. So it means a lot, particularly because this is a financial platform. And so having a bank, I think that automatically disarms a lot of people who may be, you know, kind of wary, say, I don't know if I want to use technology, or this is a new organization, can I really trust them? And now they're at least listening. So now we have the ear. The next part is we have to do the work and actually start having an impact.
Right. So I know this is the first year. Who should come out? Who should get involved? And then looking forward to next year, is this something you plan on bringing back annually?
Absolutely. So who should get involved? We're hoping the entire family. When you have a wealth initiative, you can't just talk to the parent. You can't talk to one parent, and you can't just talk to the youth. Otherwise, you're still going to have a missing link there. So we have something for the youth. We have youth entrepreneurship where we're having the wealth building challenge. And the idea behind the wealth building challenge is that we want the parent to actually sign the child up to participate in this process. And so when they go to the ION and they go to the, you know, wealth building seminars, and then they get to pitch and they get to actually win capital, it's all because somebody's mom or dad cared enough to sign their child up. And so we're hoping, to your point, next year, more people will hear about how this young person was able to get the capital they need to either, one, stay interested in entrepreneurship, or to pursue their entrepreneurship endeavors. And what if everybody in the city, you know, had that conversation, how we can start changing the financial health of our communities across the city. Also, we have the Black Market, which is vendors from all across the city. It's over 100 vendors that make products and have services, and they will be all meet up at the National Buffalo Soldiers Museum. And that's a way to actually not only shop small, but also shop Black, you know, and that's one of the things we want to push. Is like, you can't keep pushing entrepreneurship and not supporting the community. And so that's another way for us to amplify capital and uplift our entrepreneurs. We also have something on, you know, for the new online businesses. We want to show people how to use technology, you know, starting e-commerce business, online business, where you don't have to worry about capacity issues at the very beginning. You can start out with just having a good website, a good back end, and then being able to leverage, you know, your social media. And so Facebook and also the United States Black Chamber of Commerce will be participating in that talk. And that'll be hosted by Radio One as well. We have something about on Giving Tuesday. And so Black Philanthropy Houston, Ms. Latanya Flick, she'll be driving that discussion. A lot of times, I don't know how many times I say a lot of times on your podcast, but I'll say it again. A lot of times we as a community make a huge investment into nonprofits, our churches, which is great because they do amazing work. But if you have some more money, we can talk about how circulating or driving some of that capital to support an entrepreneurship, whether it's via crowdfunding or just supporting one of your local entrepreneurs. Wednesday for women entrepreneurs, talking about the next generation of women entrepreneurs. And then on Thursday, it's invest in the culture. And there we're going to pick a local barbershop. We're going to just have a conversation about how we're using technology, innovation, and finances to now solve our problems. And so I'm looking forward to that discussion and really just showing that you can have the conversation anywhere. You don't have to be at an accelerator or, incubator or some kind of business meeting to start talking about wealth. We want it to happen at the dinner table. We want it to happen in the barbershop. We want it to happen everywhere until everybody gets the point that this has to be a part of our everyday process in order for us to continue to have sustainable communities here in Houston and all across the country.
such an interesting week to do this right after Thanksgiving, but it makes sense. Like you've tackled with the black market and with Giving Tuesday. It's really cool to see how all aspects are coming together and how you framed each of that. But yeah, to continue discussing, you know, wealth building and money, I did say at the top, you've got a lot going on, and you really do, because you've also just announced the launch of Diversity Fund Houston, a $3 million initiative to support diverse tech founders in Houston. So tell me about how this initiative came about.
Yeah, to start out, just thanking my co-founders, Kylie Summers. He's an entrepreneur himself, startup. He has a startup by the name SpendEd, and also Tiffany Williams, who's my a co-founder and managing director as well. And she has her own business at Twice Media Production. As I mentioned to you at the very beginning, Natalie, a lot of this is just my journey. And then you see problems and you say, how can I solve it? Those two I found on the journey at the Houston Area Urban Link Entrepreneurship Center, where, you know, for the first 5 years, when our first 5+ years in which I was fortunate enough to spearhead a program called Small Business University, you saw entrepreneurs that were participating because they had no choice. And so you saw people who were homeless coming out of the penal system, people who just entrepreneurship by necessity, that's why they participated. Something happened around 2014 where I started seeing different caliber of participants in this program. And that's when I met Tiffany and Kylie, where they're both well-educated. They both have a strong foundation and they both have a network. However, despite how hard they worked, they still didn't get the recognition they deserved or needed, rather, in the capital markets. And so once you saw it enough and you saw people just coming back to you as a steward, you try to figure out what's the solution. And I didn't think, you know, we knew that with these new companies, a lot of them were attacking innovation companies. So it wasn't necessarily going to a micro bank, which we have partnerships with, or even a commercial bank, which, I mean, eventually they may become a partner, but not right now. These were technology companies that needed investments, you know, just to be able to take out the same amount of risk that other technology innovation companies were. And so we came together, we saw the problem, and it was more or less still trying to close the loop of capital in the Black community. And we started talking to our stakeholders. So three of the very first people we talked to, one was Grace Rodriguez, who's the executive director and CEO of Impact Hub Houston. Judson Robinson III, President and CEO of the Houston Urban Link, and then Mayor Sylvester Turner, City of Houston Mayor. And all three of them responded, like, if you do the work, we'll support you. And so that's what we did 4 years ago. We just rolled up our sleeves and we just kept knocking on doors and talking to venture capitalists, talking to leaders of startup development organizations, talking to council members. And everybody just started putting their support in. And then finally, we were able to, you know, get enough resources to get counsel. We went through DLA Piper, and then we started getting our back office set up. And eventually, we were able to pitch. And our first pitch went to Bank of America. As you can imagine, somebody who didn't know what venture capital was prior to law school, and I don't say even during law school, I may have skipped over that paragraph. But we got ready. I mean, we took enough programs. You know, people started giving us just, you know, Venture Capital University was very helpful in that process. We got our pitch together and we met with Bank of America, and fortunate. And I, you know, David Ruiz, I definitely want to give him praise, because he connected us to his venture capital group in New York, and they supported us from the very beginning. It wasn't a hard sale as we thought it would be. They understood what we want to accomplish in the community in terms of, you know, amplifying capital here in the city of Houston, uplifting not only Black entrepreneurs, but also Hispanic entrepreneurs. They understood, obviously, the population that we have here in Houston, and they've been supporting ever since then. And so 4 years have passed since we've started this journey. Now we're going to launch and celebrate our achievements and milestones up to this point. And that will be Tuesday's Thanksgiving, but next Thursday we'll celebrate with our advisory board, Bank of America, and different LPs that have already shown support for the fund. And then from there, we will hope to close it out very soon and start making investments into the community.
So what exactly are you looking for in the companies you're going to invest in, and how can, you know, potential companies learn more?
Yeah, I mean, I'll definitely stick to, you know, companies. And so it's anybody who I always use the analogy of, you know, giving a flyer out, you know, when you're a startup. And a lot of times, even when I started my first company as an insurance agent at Farmers, and I was like 24 or 25 years old, I knew that I wasn't as distinguished or as mature as some of the insurance agents that have been in the market for years. And so everybody wasn't going to listen to me talk to them about life insurance or other wealth building products. And they may talk to me about their housing or their mortgage, but they wouldn't talk to me about auto. And so I had to hand out as many flyers as I could. And I just didn't get, you know, as many responses from established individuals as I did the younger people who were still in transition. Well, we want to change that now. So for the people who put in the work, you know, if you're from a community here in Houston and you're definitely, you know, if you're from a, you know, if you're a Black founder or you're a Hispanic founder and you're just looking for somebody to take a flyer on you, listen to your pitch, give you an opportunity to actually get an investment. And we're talking about the early stages. Then contact us at Diversity Fund Houston. We are early stage venture capital fund. We know there's some great funds here in Houston that's doing amazing work in terms of if you get it right with the capital we give you and you're able to prove out your concept, get a customer or two, we actually have partners in which we'll partner you up with so that you can continue down your journey in the capital markets. And so all we're asking is for to find that founder that's committed. As long as you're committed to your journey, we will listen and we will give you an opportunity. And that's really it. I mean, we're looking to hear, I would say starting next week, contact us. I mean, we want to be able to start really investing by Q1. And so we need to have as many business pitches as possible. And we want them to be from here in Houston, because that's the only way we continue to uplift and bolster our ecosystem is by way of making sure that, you know, we get the proper investments to those people who need it.
One thing I wanted to ask you too is the timing of this. You know, why is now such a great time for this fund in Houston, but also just considering everything we've gone through in 2020 and are still continuing to face in 2021 and probably 2022 as well?
Yeah. You know, my personal answer, and this is, you know, I tell you that I'm at the right place. You know, a lot of times, especially in the Black community, we have something called the Black tax. And I don't know who made this up, and I'm not sure if it's a real thing, but I read it on Twitter one time. So if it's on Twitter, it has to be true, right, Natalie? And so they were saying how, like, each generation, you have somebody who tries to make the investments, they work as hard as they can, and then they get the resources, and then it's almost like they get drained by their family and their community. That person dies, and you hit the reset button. Well, I think now the Black American community is at a, I think, at a point, you know, since, you know, desegregation and obviously civil rights and so on and so many things that have happened, where you do have millennials that are coming to their own. And so for me, I'm an older millennial. I'm married. I have two kids. I have assets. I have a career. And so there's a level. I'm stable enough and still young enough where I can make these contributions. And the same thing with my co-founders and a lot of people that I'm working with in the ecosystem. And so we only have a certain amount of time until we become the old guard and then obviously the Black tax. I'm not trying to kill myself off, but it's just the reality. And so time is of the essence in our community because you don't want to keep losing resources. It's bad enough that because we don't have the capital and we don't have the mentors or the relationships that we need, a lot of times these brilliant ideas and opportunities die at the grave. And so we want to stop that now. And so now is the time for us to do it. And we talk about from society standpoint, you know, I'm very involved socially, politically. I just give my time where things that are needed and also where my passion lies. And so I do think there's a need to have my legal mind in certain places where I can advocate. And I also think there's a time to protest. And when you see civil unrest or when you see something that is inequitable. But a lot of what we're trying to do here is build out a box or build out an environment, rather, where people now can participate, get ownership, get the capital they need, and then ultimately solve their own problems. And which is the spirit of entrepreneurship. It's the spirit of Houston. And so when you talk about, you know, why is, you know, now the right time? Lastly, I'll talk about the geographical location where, like we talked about prior to, I mean, Texas is great for business. You know, despite what you think about the policymakers, you know, what side of the aisle you're on, one thing we do get right is business. And the same thing for the city of Houston and all the resources that we have here that we can take advantage of. Our mayor and, you know, obviously, you know, the Gal family and other stakeholders did a brilliant job in building out this tech and innovation ecosystem over the past, I guess now it's about 3 years, we're going on our fourth year. Obviously, there were some things happening before then, but that's when it really became public and you're starting to see an investment in the infrastructure. So this is a new opportunity where we have a new industry that in which people who have been marginalized for so long can now jump in. I don't want to say it's early stage, but it's still early enough where they can participate in the wealth building process. And the only way we can do that is together. And so when you look at Equal Liberty, I talk about a lot of it's just convening resources using technology. Diversity Fund Houston, it's not so that we can become some large, you know, venture capital fund like, you know, like we have Mercury Fund here in Houston and others out here doing great work. You say, no, we're just trying to make it so that there's a space where you can create opportunities if you want it, and then you can now be a full active participant in the general economy like everybody else who's born in the right zip code with the right family, sometimes the right skin color, sometimes the right gender, or sometimes they're just at the right place at the right time. And that's what we're hoping we do with Diversity Fund Houston, Equal Liberty, and just as a community as a whole.
It's such a great point because I know one of the, I guess, silver linings of Houston having a lot younger of an innovation ecosystem compared to some other markets is just that we can build learning off of the mistakes of other innovation ecosystems. And it's that's twofold with Houston. You know, we're a diverse city and we're going to fix the problem of diversity within tech in theory, right? If anyone can do it, Houston can do it. So that is something that rings true to what you're saying for sure. I just wonder, and this is might be the hardest question I ask you today, but you know, how do you track progress? Like, how do you see things changing? I'm sure they're different from 5-10 years ago now, but in what ways, and then in what ways do we still need to see significant change? Like, what are you keeping a close eye on?
Now, it's a really good question. And so one of the first law firms I worked at and my mentor was Nelson Jones, and guy who's worked in the Senate and did many, many great things here in the legal community, here locally and across the country. And that's what he always would ask me. He said, you know, how do you track progress? I know you've logged so many hours. I've seen you talk about it. He's watched me, you know, work at the law firm and then go late at night and go, you know, mentor and spearhead a community organization. And so that's what started Equal Liberty, was the fact that I said, you're right. You have to be able to show progress. Otherwise, you're paying the black tax. I mean, it may make you feel good when you go to sleep. Hey, mom, hey, dad, hey, wife, hey, kids. I was a community leader and I did some great things. And that's great. It may even get me into heaven, right? But does it change lives? And so creating an infrastructure utilizing technology, utilizing data, utilizing AI and machine learning, and all these new tools that we have allows us to actually track progress. In fact, we're actually giving the tool to the person who says they want wealth, they want progress, that they want to be in a different place, and we're going to allow them to track themselves. And so that's the first point about Equal Liberty in terms of accountability. It's not only holding the ecosystem accountable, it's holding the user accountable, because now you have the tools in the palm of your hand to accomplish what you say you want to accomplish, because we're bringing everybody who you need to your doorstep. The second part, that's a little bit harder with venture capital, because like you said, I mean, tech and innovation is new, here at least, but across the country in terms of African Americans or even just minorities in general participating in venture capital, it's a very new concept. I mean, we're talking 1% while billions of dollars are floating around. It's being amplified daily, even more so since the pandemic. And so I do think you're going to need some people who just want to do good, who want to have an impact, and to get involved. And that's why I'm thankful for the Innovation Map and others that, you know, will listen to our story and take a flyer on Diversity Fund Houston so that somebody else can have the opportunity to live out their dreams. But then on the other end, accountability also starts with myself and my co-founders, my advisory boards, my LPs, and everybody else involved in Diversity Fund Houston, where we have to do it right. I mean, we have to make sure that, you know, we go through the proper legal counsel and have the proper infrastructure to have a fund. We have to make sure that we have a due diligence process so that everybody who does approach us, who are doing something special in the ecosystem, can go through that process and make it to our investment committee. And we want to make sure that we have a profile of what success looks like. We're not trying to necessarily change the rules of engagement. So you will see success if you're doing it the right way, I believe. We'll start seeing results over time. But saying all that, I don't think it's going to happen tomorrow night. But I've been on this journey for 10 plus years. I think we're a lot closer in my lifetime than we've ever been. And so with partners like, again, I'll keep throwing you guys out there because you make phone call. I'm thankful for that innovation map, you know, like the city of Houston, like the IONS of the world and everybody else. And obviously Bank of America, Chase Bank and all of our other partners. I think eventually we'll do it together. And that's the only way you can make progress. And so that's my final answer to that long-winded answer is together. That's how you see progress. Because I seriously doubt all of us in the room together trying to solve a problem that we'll get it wrong.
Yeah, I think something else that is changing, just to your point, is it's less of people, you know, shining a spotlight on diverse entrepreneurs because it's the nice thing to do. Like, there's a real opportunity. Like, this is a very underserved community that has a lot of potential. There's tons of interesting tech companies, you know, like it's just this untapped market in a lot of sense. So I wonder if like how much, you know, you just want to scream that from the rooftops sometimes. Like, look at these companies. They're definitely investable. They've got really great technologies.
Yes. It's funny, a couple of years ago, I forgot which, it was right before the pandemic, and I was participating in a pitch competition. I was sitting on the advisory board for BAMA, Business Angel Minority Association, and I hear a pitch from somebody who's not a non-African American, and it's the same pitch that I heard 3 years ago from an African American down at the Houston Area Urban League. And I was like, wow. I mean, we're talking about identical business model. The only difference was the person who was pitching before all these, you know, angel investors and venture capitalists had a network or had access to capital. They knew the process already. They were already exposed to how capital markets work versus, you know, you had somebody on the other end that had no exposure and was just trying to get an opportunity. So absolutely. And there's enough reports out there now to show, you know, diversity is profitable. And there's enough reports out there that you can read that if we unlock this new asset class, and we tap into it, we're talking about billions of dollars, not only for the financial institutions, but for our community. So, yes, I'm screaming this like it's not only the right thing to do. And in fact, I'm tired of us celebrating the one-offs. You know, here's the startup winner who looks, you know, who's Black. And it's like, let's put them on the front and go say some nice things and let's take a picture and let's post it on social media. Those days are gone. I mean, there's more than one. And that's exactly what I'm hoping Equilibrity prevents, where you have to keep getting extracted to go to another community, and that's where you feel accepted. Not saying that we don't need to participate together in the economy, because obviously you have to, but you shouldn't have to leave your home to feel comfortable. And that's what we want to prevent. You should be able to stay home, get the investments you need, grow your product or your service, and elevate it and create wealth right there in the space in which you were born, raised, and feel comfortable.
Yeah, absolutely. I think something we've touched on a little bit throughout this conversation is what being in Houston, what the difference has been being in Houston and in Texas. So, you know, Houston being one of the most diverse cities in the country, Texas being, you know, amazing for business, as you've mentioned. For you, what has it been, I guess, pros and cons of being based here in Houston, Texas, with all of these endeavors, really?
No, No, the good part is I have parents that pretty much they went through their adult lives here in Houston. My family's from Pittsburgh, but they were already established. So I was able to walk into a community and actually get introductions. And so it goes back to those relationships. But the hard part is, like you said, we are behind the eight ball when it comes to, you know, capital markets, entrepreneurship, tech, and innovation. And so the people who have been exposed just traditionally didn't look like me. And so when I first started this journey, trying to go talk to somebody about, you know, a startup versus a lifestyle business, it was hard to have a discussion because unless you were exposed to, you didn't know the difference. And so you really couldn't get advice. And when you talk about venture capital, oh, wow, that's no more than, oh, go talk to HBDI, which is doing amazing things in the micro lending institution, but not when we're talking about venture capital. And so that was one of the harder parts, was finding a network in which I can learn about venture capital, learn about entrepreneurship, tech, and innovation. And so I had to just be a sponge and immerse myself in the rooms get to know a new network. And then I would take those resources back, run over to, you know, places I was either teaching or facilitating in the Black community and try to share as much knowledge as possible. But on the opposite side of that coin, it's been great being here because I was able to do exactly what I said. I mean, there were so many open doors where once people knew that I was trying to make an impact in our community for whether it's the Hispanic population, the Black community, for women, or just for people who come from marginalized communities, nobody said no. Everybody said, yes, let's solve this problem. In fact, even if we don't have the answer, sort of what you said earlier, in Houston, we just have this mindset like, okay, it's a problem, we can solve it. It's not good for Texans, it's not good for us. So if you're convincing me that diversity is good for us, I can help you make that change. And that's the response I've gotten. I just think that's just the way Texans are. I think that's the Houston way. And I'm very thankful for that, for our ecosystem. And that's why I feel like through this launch of Equal Liberty, Black Entrepreneurship Week, Diversity Fund, and all the other amazing things we have going on to help link people to capital and close that loop and really just bring the village closer to capital, it's going to happen because the village is surrounded by some great people inside in our ecosystem.
Yeah, it's so true. And it's great to see your perspective on this. And I really appreciate everything you're doing. All of these initiatives that you're juggling are really going to add up to make a huge difference in Houston. I know you know that. I know all of your partners know that. So I appreciate you taking the time to talk with me today. Best of luck on Black Entrepreneurship Week. It sounds like it's going to be a hit and a staple over the years.
Thank you so much, Nat. Thank you, Innovation Map. And I look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Houston Innovators Podcast. Don't forget to hit subscribe so you don't miss next week's edition. And check out innovationmap.com for the latest Houston startup and innovation news.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.